time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 2nd of October. Island Life is our weekly magazine show, focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, arts and clothing. You'll find them at Ocean View Road, Onuroa. On Saturday the 2nd of October, I spoke to the organiser of the Waiheke Peace Walk, Skate, along with poet Sue McCann and international peace campaigner Mayra Gomez. I joined up with the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, taking a look at the local board elections, and I spoke to Bianca Sanders from the Waiheke Burlesque Festival. You are on Waiheke Radio. This is Island Life, brought to you by Island. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Onuroa. And last year we saw there was a huge number of people turned out for a peace walk from Ostend to Maitiatia. And later on in the show, I'll post up some links on the website where we have a documentary that we recorded last year about that peace walk. And that was a great success. And so it's being repeated again this year. And we have some of the organisers and people involved with that here with us now. So first of all, good morning, Skate.
Good morning, Waiheke. Morning, Chris. Lovely to be back again.
You can move that microphone if you like, so you don't have to, you just pull it to where you want it. There we go. Yeah. All right, so tell us a little bit about, we'll talk more about this in a moment, but just what's on this afternoon and where and when and all the rest of it.
Yes, it's 1 year on exactly. It's Gandhi's birthday again, and we're doing another peace walk on Waiheke Island. This time we've even got beautifully embroidered Waiheke Peace hats being sold down at the marae. We're doing a walk. We've got Kit and Mani running at the front, and banners and placards and bubbles and bicyclists. We're going to leave Marae after our walk's being blessed. We'll walk around the waterfront on that beautiful foreshore and all gather at the Surfdale Hall, where we're going to have 1 minute's silence for all the worries of the world, including our children in the future. 170 candles in the symbol of the peace sign, and we will have Sue read a magnificent poem she wrote just for the occasion. Ben Carr will do a song he's written just for Kit and Mani in the new year, and it just gets bigger and bigger and launches from then to V12, drummers, Liana and Craig, Ben Carr. It's going to be fun, and then we'll be dancing till about 4:30, and then everyone will probably go over to Junk the Funk.
Very good. Now, you mentioned Sue McCann's poem, and Sue's here as well. Let's just turn you on, Sue. Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
All right. A little nervous. That's okay. Okay, so what inspired you to write this poem?
Skate came and saw me at the shop, and she was talking about the peace walk, and I do like to write a few things for occasions. I usually need to have a bit of background on it, and it was something that I felt strongly about. I feel that peace should be celebrated in times of peace, not just be demonstrated in times of crisis. So I wrote this poem. On October the 2nd at 1 p.m, right on the incoming tide, there will be a walk of peace to Surfdale Beach, leaving from Piritahi Marae. The day has significance. It's the birth date of Gandhi, a champion of world change and love, for whom the remembrance gives our hikoi its semblance with an outpouring of warmth from above. Peace is a word that is so easily spoken, it tumbles right out of the mouth. But what does it mean? Well, depends where you've been. Is it for others or just for yourself? It can be a lack of something, like noise or pollution, or an absence of confusion or clutter. It can be freedom from pain, from violence and war, or from insults that won't have to be suffered. It can be the warm summer rain, the curl of a wave, the smile on a young baby's face. Just to look in the mirror and find ease of reflection, the knowing you've found your right place. So if any of these reasons is reason enough, then come join us. We'll be waiting for you to walk side by side on the incoming tide for peace. It's the least we can do.
And Sue, thank you. Brilliant. So you're going to be performing that this afternoon as well?
Yep.
Yeah, down at Surfdale. What time do you think you're going to get down to the hall there?
Well, we're sort of figuring if we leave the Marae with Wally Monahy blessing, it'll probably take us about 25 minutes to half an hour to stroll around the waterfront. Pat King's bringing her massive big motorbike. It's all going to be fun today, Chris.
Excellent. Now, we have another guest here who's going to just pop into the studio as well. And we've got shuffling. Would you like to sit down or stand up?
Either way, it's fine.
Okay, good as gold. So here we go. Okay, so another person who's involved with this afternoon's Peace Walk is Mayra, is that correct?
Mayra Gomez.
Now, Mayra, you've been involved at an international level with the peace movement, haven't you?
I have. Originally, Tenakoto Katoa, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of paradise that you have here. I've taken the morning to walk around the beach and talk to the spirits of the four winds that brought me here. It's a wonderful day. It's a wonderful celebration to be in your island today. I was born to the Aymara nation of Bolivia. And since I've been a little girl, I've been asking why. Why is there injustice? Why are some poor, some rich? Why are and that led me to be involved in the peace movement. I have currently been appointed vice president of the International Peace Bureau, which is an organization that was a recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. It is an umbrella organization of many, many organizations that work for social justice, for peace in the world. And here, my appointment in New Zealand is working with the Peace Foundation. I'm the Global Communities Coordinator. And I also work for parliamentarians for nuclear non-proliferation and disarmament.
So the peace movement is fairly broad in its scope, isn't it? Everything from, you know, issues of domestic violence to, as you say, nuclear disarmament.
Yeah, I like it to bring it really down to an understanding level. What is it? All of us want the well-being. It's a matter of being well, whether that be of human beings or that of animals or our mother, the earth. If all is well, then it follows there is harmony and there is peace. So it really encompasses the entire scope of just being.
So an event like today's one, the walk from the Marae to Surfdale, is the focus of that that more general holistic sense of peace, or is it focused more on, you know, some of the more specific instances of violence and warfare that we have going on around the world?
I think each locality, you know, being United Nations Day of International Day for Nonviolence, celebrating Gandhi's birthday, encompasses everything from the, you know, deeper inside level to really what connects us as human beings on Earth. But each place who celebrates gives it its own flavor and its own particularity. And you've heard from Skate what the you know, here I've just arrived yesterday, and I certainly sense from the organizers it is a celebration about the affirmation of life in all that connects us. So for me, that means global climate change issues. It means nuclear disarmament issues. It means injustice in the street, domestic violence. It really means everything, doesn't it?
Now, tell us a little more about your work with parliamentarians for nuclear disarmament. What does that involve?
It is an international organization of MPs throughout the world. There's about 800 of them, and we're presently in 75 countries. And the organization brings them together to share information and good practices of lobbying their own governments to take position toward disarmament steps. Presently, the Secretary General of United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, has clearly stated a 5-point plan for disarmament, and one of the points is the establishment of a nuclear convention on nuclear arms, nuclear weapons convention. And we were going into the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty Review Conference this year in May. We were very successful in that we got a voice from the Interparliamentary Union, which encompasses parliaments from all over the world, to come up with a resolution asking precisely that. And in some parliaments, such as the New Zealand Parliament, where we were very proud of them, at the last minute, but they did come up with a unanimous position to their government calling for a nuclear weapons convention. And that was delivered by Minister of Disarmament Georgina Tahoehoe at the UN headquarters this May.
It must be a frustrating process, though, where you can make, you can make inroads like that, but at the same time, in some ways, we have a proliferation of violence and war, you know, with, much of the developing world falling into disarray in the civil war, and we've got the nuclear proliferation of states other than the traditional nuclear states.
Certainly, we have tremendous challenges in the world, and as we have since the beginning of humanity, but it's progress, not perfection. And there is also, you can look at the sort of half full, half empty glass. You can really concentrate on it being half empty, or you can celebrate all that has been done in the recent history. We've got a clusters munition convention passed. We've got states... we've got Russia and the United States finally signed START II treaty, and it having been approved in the Senate recently. This was just 2 weeks ago. No one expected that would happen because politics were at its play. The Republicans did not want that victory for Obama. Yet at the last minute, it did pass. And it's persistence and patience. And I think that's what human beings are. We're very resilient. Colonialism lasted in Spain for 800 years. But eventually the Spaniards were able to make some redress to themselves, even though they continued and sort of repeated their story and so on, you know. And it's again, I look at the glass half full. And I celebrate this resilience of humanity to continue to be persistent and to know from their inner intimate core what is good for all of us. What is good for me is good for you. What is good for the island is good for the earth.
Great. Mara Gomez, will you be speaking this afternoon in Surfdale?
Not really sure. I don't think so. I don't think that there's anything in the program for that.
I think you should. There goes Skate. You should add that to the program. Okay, Skate, so just give us the rundown again of the where and when and what's involved.
We're gathering at 12:30 at the Marae on the grass verge out the front where the walkers are. And we gather there and buy caps and think bits and pieces. And sing songs, and then we're walking around from the Marae after Wally Manahi blesses us the walk, world peace, Gandhi, International Peace Day. And we'll walk around the waterfront to get to the Surfdale Hall about 1:30. We're walking in a good group because Kit and Mani are going to lead today.
Excellent. Now, we should also mention as well that also on our website, and I'll put the links up again, there are interviews with both Kit and Mani, who are two of Waiheke's, I suppose, most celebrated peace activists.
Mm-hmm. And Reen and Martini and lots of our Rainbow Warrior heroes, Pat King, are all going to be down there carrying banners or placards and singing and ukuleles, and it'll be a great celebration of community networking, cohesive energy, knowing that we're there, and we'd like to make Waiheke well known for its peace and its peace activists.
Great, thank you. So we've been talking to Skate, Mara Gomez and Sue McCann.
Come down, everybody. It'll be a great day.
1 o'clock at the Marae. Thank you very much for coming in. You're on Island Life here on Waiheke Radio. Earlier in the morning, we spoke to some of the activists involved with this afternoon's peace walk, Skate, Sue McCann and Mara Gomez. And I mentioned a couple of interviews of prominent peace campaigners that we've recorded earlier here on Waiheke Radio. If you go to our website and scroll down on the right-hand side, you'll see a search function there. And if you search for peace, you'll come across all of those. And there's some fascinating interviews with some of our peace campaigners who have been to places like Greenham Common and so on, Mani Thompson and Cara Nelson in particular. And also there's a piece there on last year's peace walk. So if you want to check out more there, go to our website and do a search for peace. Now, for something completely different, it's the first Saturday of the month, and I'm joined, as we are every first Saturday of the month, by our opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, now last month I set you a task of looking at the candidates for our local board in the upcoming election. Oops. Alex is pulling the place apart.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll be under control soon.
Yep. So, and we looked at the candidates for the local board, and I asked you to pick your dream teams and scream teams, and that was interesting and quite interesting. And now we're going back to the elections, because we've had a month of campaigning, we've had candidates meetings and so on. So we thought we'd take a look and see, you know, what you're thinking now.
Yeah, well, we both weren't dying to start. You go first, Alan.
Yeah, I managed to attend pretty much everything except the Awaroa meeting.
Do you get a prize?
I think I deserve one for sitting through the amount of rather vague waffling that I've had to listen to in the last month. Yeah. But I wouldn't have missed it for the world. It's been great.
It's a fascinating process. And I found a lovely analogy this morning just driving here was to see all the inorganic rubbish being put out. Kind of it just comes without... I don't know how people know that it's now's the time to do it. There must be an official notice somewhere. But I thought it was a lovely analogy because it kind of overlaps with the election where we've got the 17 candidates who've put themselves out to be picked over, a bit like, you know, organic rubbish, you know.
Yes, and there was an awful lot of rubbish, organic and inorganic. I know, being dribbled on the campaign trail
with the inorganic rubbish collection. I have a tendency to want to take things home.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. Oh, but I must admit, on the way here, I went through Surfdale and Blackpool, and the pickings didn't look so flash. I think I should be cruising the streets of Maitea and Church Bay and Park Point Estates. Maybe they've got higher quality merchandise out there. But
yeah. there's always something you end up bringing home from the...
But just getting back to this picking over the candidates situation, I think we need to disclaimer at this point. It's democracy is a messy old process, and a big part of democracy is robust debate. So if in the past we've said things a bit too robust for some of the candidates, that's just how it is. There's no harm intended, no evil intent. It's just the nature of democracy.
Yeah, so, you lay out the stall, you can't complain if people criticise the goods.
Yeah, yeah. But that's been very entertaining, I think.
But I think it was good this year, this time round, because we actually did get some robust debate, which of course last elections was missing.
Yeah.
The one meeting that we had, there was very little in the way of questioning from the audience was allowed, and so some of the issues that have been raised this time round, it was quite nice to see the whole debate come alive.
Yeah, no, it was good stuff. Yeah, what I think has been a character of this debate are red herrings in the debate. You know, often we've talked about stuff that's way beyond the gambit. Is that the word? Orbit, gambit, whatever. Of a community board. You know, we're talking about global warming and biosphere and this and that.
Even housing, which kept coming up. Yeah. What are the local boards supposed to do about housing?
Low-cost housing. You know, they're issues that are bigger.
Completely out of their control.
So I've tried to keep my analysis of the campaigners into what they've said and their record in the kind of stuff that they will be involved in, what community board politics is all about, yeah.
So we've had a couple of different candidate meetings, and you've been along to those. You know, what impressed you there? Who performed well?
Well, the interesting thing was, I mean, some people performed very well. Marika Ransom came up, in my estimation, from the first meeting. She spoke very passionately and well in focus. And then lost it on the second meeting. Yeah. In fact, it says in my notes, my eyes glazed over. Mm. She completely lost the crowd.
Yeah, I think
at that point. It's funny how you can do it one day and not the next.
Yeah, it could be that some candidates do a bit of passion and think, oh, I better be safer next time round. Case in point, perhaps, is Colin Bearden, who started off everything was the biosphere, and he hardly mentions it now.
So. I think he must have realised that this was one of the things that was turning people off him in droves. A lot of people I've talked to agree that, yes, the biosphere was a disastrous thing. It's probably the worst thing about this election was that it was allowed, that whole issue was allowed to come in and muddy the waters.
Well, I count it as one of the red herrings of this debate. You know, it may be a grand and noble idea, but it's outside the orbit of local of ourselves, and the main irony is the telling turning points in the debate are outside of our control. The biosphere only becomes a biosphere if an MP takes it to Parliament and then the New Zealand government ratifies it. So it's we're asking somebody else to do something for us, and it's totally out of our control.
So yes, it was definitely the most pointless aspect to the whole election. Yeah. You know, it would have been a great. It's a great shame that it was allowed to take up so much of the time. Yeah.
But maybe it was allowed to because so many people are interested in it.
Well, I'm not so sure. Yeah. I think that's the other thing that intrigues me about the Biosphere proposal is if you listen carefully to Colin, and I've been listening carefully to all the candidates, you know, you get some very telling slips of the tongue. And if Colin talks about the Biosphere, it's always in the first person. It's my project, and it's my meetings, and the things I have done. It's always about himself. And whether it's a community-wide, whether it has a community-wide support is a very moot point, and I don't think it is there for by a long way. Also, I think his insistence that it's the only way forward is something of an affront to people who have worked on environmental issues throughout this island for many, many years. There are people been planting community gardens and planting trees and, you know, rat trapping and doing all sorts of things, and, you know, they're just getting on with it. They're not trying to create a bias.
You know, speaking of people saying things that are perhaps inappropriate, there's one note I had here from Don McKenzie last Sunday where he said, "We have to sell Waiheke as an asset to Auckland." And I've written, "Could have been better phrased."
We sold it already.
Yes.
Well, for me, one of the telling slips of the tongue, I think Alan was talking about a Razzie Awards or what is it?
Oh, yes, the Ninny Awards.
The Ninny Awards. But one of them, the most telling slip of the tongue, one telling slip of the tongue was Herb Romanuk introduced himself as the traffic spokesperson on the last board, where his job is actually the transport spokesperson. But the slip of the tongue showed that Herb's view of transport is cars. It's only traffic, whereas obviously you need someone with a slightly wider view of what transport entails.
Now, Herb was one that raised issues with the coverage in the media. There was letters that were critical of his role on the transport forum and the transport spokesperson role, and he felt, you know, he should have been given right of reply to those letters. Do you think it a fair case there?
I think he could have held off on the letters.
Yeah,
they did not help his cause.
I think the letter takes the Ninny Award for, what should we call it?
Self-pitying. Yes.
You know, this is a democracy, as we said, first of all, and you do get judged. I mean, I think Herb has a fair point. A lot of the judging that goes on is uninformed. But then a lot of those perceptions that were formed directly from his performance. So, you know, if he says he's been criticized, I mean, that's how it happens, you know. And you maybe have to accept you're being criticized because you didn't perform.
Mm. Yeah.
And if he wants right of reply, you know, he could have replied in the letter he wrote rather than saying, "I'm miserable because people are telling bad stories about me," you know. He could have laid down his record, yeah. So that gets a Ninny Award for self-pity.
Yes. I think another Ninny Award for the most overused phrase, "I think it's very important."
Oh, yeah.
I lost count of the number of times I heard people say that. I think it's very important. Very sick of hearing that.
Was there any particular candidates who favoured that phrase?
No, everyone was doing it.
Yeah.
Everyone seemed to think it was very important.
Well, I suppose it is, isn't it?
Yes.
I know it's bad form to stray into what people look like, but you know, we're meant to judge them on their policy.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But I love the sort of Churchillian stern set of visage that Jo Holmes would affect whenever something seemed important. She would put this stern, downturned mouth and say, "I think it's very important," and get on.
I think Jo Holmes has been extremely entertaining on the campaign trail.
Yeah. Well, she'd get my Ninny Award for the most unfortunate symbolism. The bright yellow jacket, I think, is a wonderful touch. If she can't see the irony in that, bless her.
Oh, with the Rodney Hyde Association.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you were asking, had our dream teams changed? And, well, no, mine haven't. And my vote for Jo Holmes was still the same.
Which was it? I can't remember.
Yeah, Joe was on Alan's dream team.
On the dream team.
I think she'd be very good.
She stays on my scream team. I'm sorry, Joe, but she's definitely... She demonstrated to me on a number of occasions that although she says she listens, she's got no capacity to listen. unfortunately. So perhaps a bit of listening skills would come in order.
Now, last weekend we had the Golf News hosted a meeting, and it was great because it was kind of innovative and quite different
it
from the other one. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Do you get along to that one as well?
No, sorry, I missed that. I sneaked off and went sailing so bad.
It was a lovely day.
Alan was my eyes and ears.
The 3-minute statements, there were some fairly uninspiring ones. I think I've noted here that, yes, the likes of Don McKenzie, Vic Martick, and Graham Hooper. If ever there was a campaign that sort of deserved to be sort of quietly and kindly euthanized, it was his campaign.
I think it needs to be enshrined as a great sort of hilarious train wreck of a camp. Sorry, Graham, but I would give Graham the Ninny Award for irony. I loved the part at the previous meeting where he stood up and said, I was very grumpy because I couldn't get to the Awaroa Eco Village meeting yesterday because he felt it was... This is rich irony that he felt it was unfair that the Eco Village folk had expected all 17 candidates to drive out there individually, and he doesn't have a car, so it was too far to go. And then he said we should have organized a bus, which would have been a wonderful green sort of initiative, but then he neglected to actually organize the bus, so...
Mm.
There was lovely irony in that.
Or ring someone up for a lift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could have been done.
As I say, he just seemed to spend the entire campaign channeling Neil from The Young Ones.
But
guys, I've booked a Bob Marley tribute band as a kind of last desperate action.
Mm, he was lovely. He was, how you'd say, he's right into broadband, but he doesn't have a computer.
Yes.
And he
also last Sunday opened his comments by admitting that he'd never actually seen the question that was being set. Mind you, not that it mattered, because hardly any of the other candidates addressed the question either.
Which question was this, then?
There was something to do with, what specific things would they address?
Oh, okay.
And most of them didn't really answer the question. They got up and talked about themselves, talked about other people, waffled on. And, there was some passion but no content. I'd say the Ninny Award for most passion, least content would have to go to Paul Walden.
I'd give him.
I've listened to him talk on for ages now, and I'm still at a loss for what he's actually standing for.
Mm.
Most other people managed to sort of nail down one or two things that they actually stood for. He just waffled.
He's an interesting character, that one, because when I first heard him, I thought, hey, he's a good local lad from way back, and sounded passionate. But one of those situations of getting to know him too well was a bit of a disadvantage. And I would give him the Ninny Award for the most well-kept secret. In his election campaign, there was no mention of his unfortunate part in the golf club stroke pony club stoush. And for me, that says a lot about... I don't know if you know the story about this. There's meant to be a horse trekking trail around the back of the golf course, which is fine. I reckon the two community groups could learn to share. And the golf club could have a local rule that says don't hit the balls when the horses are going behind the green or something like that. But Walden, bless his socks, took to riding his horse up the center of the fairways and just rocked up the whole thing. And this is a classic case of community board stuff in action. This is exactly what you'll face as a community board member, trying to manage the expectations of two community groups and come to a nice compromise, whereas he did quite the opposite. And he hasn't mentioned it at all in his campaign. And I do understand that the golf club, which is the single biggest community on the island, I think they have a 500 member emailing list, have sent out a specific email. I've just heard this, that not to vote for him. So he's put himself offside with the biggest single community group. Yeah.
He also, it was definitely one of the most peculiar moments of the whole campaign, was at the Grey Power meeting at Ostend Hall, how he was clutching a framed photograph, which halfway through his speech he then showed to us, which was a picture of his mum, aged 12 or something. I'm still trying to work out what that was supposed to mean. It obviously meant something to him because he was very proud of showing this picture of his mum, but I'm not...
It may be showing us he's got one guaranteed vote.
Yes.
Talking about that, I'm very sad that we don't have Noble Angelo in this campaign. It would have been lovely to see how many votes he would have got.
Very few.
Whether he even would have got his own vote, Would he have got one vote? I wonder.
Yeah, we covered this before, didn't we? I was very torn because on the one hand, I'm delighted to see he's not standing because he would have confuse the whole issue again with his strange approach to things. But then again, it would have been lovely to see the level of public rejection of his last 3 years, which have been disastrous.
But then again, it's the old democracy thing. You know, we're not... We have levels of naivety and delusion within our democracy that are quite odd. You know, who knows? He might have got people who re-voted, gave him a second chance.
Well, with 17 candidates, it could go any way, couldn't it?
It could.
Yeah, I think some people
Very hard at this stage to say with any certainty who's going to get in.
I think there'll be a lot of vote splitting, and some people get in with quite low numbers of votes.
Now, I'm not sure how many people stood last time, but it wasn't 17. Nine. Yeah. So there seems to have, the super city seems to have piqued people's interest. We've got a lot of people standing who perhaps might not have stood otherwise.
And yet, you say it's piqued people's interest, and yet turnout at the public meetings has never been lower. Last election, I remember the Ostend Hall was standing room only. This time round, barely half full.
What also intrigued me at the meetings was I've been saying this for a while now, and it disturbs me a bit that Waiheke is separating into distinctly different demographics. And some of these demographic groups are invisible. They have been in these public meetings, for instance. The church by Matiatia set, completely invisible at the public meetings.
Hmm.
And there's quite a large group of professional 30-something commuters. They completely invisible as well. So my point is, are they contributing? Will they contribute to this election? Do they think they're that well informed that they don't have to come and meet candidates personally? Or are they quite disinterested? Because either way, it doesn't seem that they're part of this community, which is, you know, it's... I think when you live here, you should buy in. You know?
Yeah, it is reasonable to expect a decent level of engagement on these things, and sadly, that didn't seem to happen.
Yes, I think that's disappointing. Those people could also put something valuable to the debate. Actually, one of the Ninny Awards I would give to the most invisible campaign has been Clarissa Snyders, but she seems a reasonable enough person with some useful skills, and perhaps the demographics I just mentioned might have supported her. So if they had engaged, she might have had
she run for election in the last election, I think she'd gone in. Yeah. But I think in this particular case, she was a little lost in the background noise.
So is it because this time the bar is higher, or because the stakes are higher?
Both.
And I think the campaigning this time is. I'm impressed how much campaigning people have done. How many posters they've invested in, and you know, stickers on their cars. They're really going for it.
There's people out and about. Yeah. I saw Paul Walden's over at the library right now. Everyone's working.
I did a little search to see who was using Twitter. Just I don't know why.
Yeah.
And there were three. Millie Watkins has a Twitter account which has one post on it from a few months ago. She obviously hasn't taken that up. Andy Spence has been using Twitter comprehensively throughout the campaign, and Vic Martek has had one post as well, watching TV.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah, I think he's written himself out of the race. One thing that did disappoint me about...
Do you think so, or do you think other people have written him out of the race?
Sorry?
Do you think he's written himself out, or other people have written him out? I mean, actively campaigning, isn't
he? I don't think he was ever really in the race.
I don't think he... I just don't see
he
him.
He was a no-show at the Grey Power meeting at Ostend.
Yeah, not
he turned up at the...
Which he says he didn't know about, though, doesn't he?
And he turned up last Sunday and really was quite unimpressive.
Yeah. I was disappointed how little the candidates have responded to questions on the radio station website. I would have thought that would have been a perfect forum for debate.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, a few of them chipped in.
Yeah, but another sort of side issue, if maybe the bloggers, the contributors to the debate, if they had identified themselves, we would have gotten rid of Joe Holmes constantly saying, identify yourself.
And we did cop some criticism about that as well, that, you know, that people were posting comments rather than questions or stuff on the issues. So, I mean, and we'd probably, you know, take a bit of that on the chin, actually. Yeah. But what about the, you know, and I think we probably would do it a little differently next time, but and it's died away now, but it seemed to, what it did serve a purpose for is identifying a number of questions to put to the candidates in their interviews, which we wouldn't have come up with otherwise.
Yeah, good
and
point.
That was valuable. Yeah. What about the other media coverage? Has that been helpful in making your decisions?
Well, no. I think it's been incredibly disappointing. There has been little or no analysis
I agree with you there,
the campaign. I mean, really, the radio is the only one that's done that. Mm. And a particular thumbs down to the marketplace for sort of losing interest in the whole thing last week and burying the last five candidates' profiles right in the middle of the real estate section, which nobody reads.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're particularly interested in real estate, which most people aren't.
Real estate gets read by tourists who flick through it on the ferry.
Yeah, but it was very strange that they'd sort of started off for a couple of weeks running candidate profiles in the main part of the paper. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can't be bothered anymore. What should we do with the last five? I'll just bung them somewhere out of sight.
Yeah, it seems the print media, as Alan said, didn't really analyse issues or tease things out. Most I've found out is just by snousing around myself and finding out things like, say, the Paul Walden situation. Because what you get otherwise is just them saying, I'm a good guy, vote for me. And we need to know a bit more than that. Yeah. And it's easy enough on a small community like this. Yeah.
What would you have liked to have seen the print media doing?
Well, I think, as I suggested last time, the Gulf News should simply have put Basil Holmes on the payroll for the duration of the campaign. Because, you know, he's the one person who actually seems to have the knowledge to be able to write something that gives some detailed analysis of the issues and the candidates.
Or maybe some pointed questions presented to the candidates from, you know, a group, open invitation, ask candidates pointed questions and we'll get their responses in writing. And in which case we would have been able to ask Paul about his relationship with the golf club or exactly how much support the Biosphere project's got or things like that, yeah.
All right, so the voting closes 9th, doesn't it? But they're recommending that people get papers in.
On Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah. You've both done that?
Oh, yes.
No, I haven't yet because I'm, you know, when I first saw the 17 candidates, I thought, geez, I can't. Yeah, it seems too many. But the easy part was crossing ones off, you know. I didn't realize how easy it would be saying, no, not that one, not that one. So I'm down to, I can't fill up my five at the moment. So I've got one or possibly two spaces still available on my dream team.
Yeah, so if anyone wants to go door knocking.
Yeah, come and talk to me.
Yes.
And I've, do we go back to our dream teams now or what?
Mine remains unchanged.
Yeah.
Yours changed, Alex?
Well, as I say, I've got one place that I'd still like to fill. And previously, I wasn't sure if I would vote for both Faye and Denise Roche, but I think I will this time. I think Denise had some pointed questions at the Grey Power meeting, which I don't think she answered well enough, but I think she deserves a second go. I think she's worthy of a second go.
The only change that I made would have been to my screen team. I would probably have dropped Don McKenzie from the screen team and brought in Jim Hannon. Because I have a feeling the real Jim Hannon is bound and gagged in his underwear in a cellar somewhere, and what's running around is some weird pod person. Because his behaviour at the meetings, well, he wasn't there at the second meeting, but his behaviour at the Grey Power meeting was incredibly strange. Referring to himself in the first person on something.
Third person.
No, in the first person. He said, Jim Hannon stands for this, and Jim Hannon believes it.
Yeah.
I don't know where he got that idea that somehow referring to yourself in the first person is a good idea, but it isn't.
Yeah, I think Alex is right. It is the third person.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I'm intrigued with Jim's...
Oh, yes, third person. I'm sorry.
Those are the two numbers that have always confused me. The thing that intrigues me about Jim's campaign is he keeps this mantra, jobs, jobs, jobs. But where does it lead? Like, if we got a proposal for a 1,000-bed casino with... you know, on the island, would he be for it because it created lots of jobs? You know, there's some of these mantras are tricky because they don't take into account what we really are. You know, jobs, jobs, jobs is not everything about a society. Yeah.
Mm.
And you know, if you say you only about development, it's a slippery path. So I think that might work against him, yeah.
But well, yes, I definitely think there needs to be some investigation on what's happened to the real Jim Hannon, because I remember Jim Hannon as, you know, he's the nice, cheerful guy on the boat who always wishes you a cheery good morning.
And I think
the
get
guy
him
who's
vote.
Campaigning has was sitting there with this strange, lizard like, unblinking stare through half the meeting, looking like one of those sort of dangerously psychotic people you find sitting in the corner of pubs.
But I think the friendly, cheery guy just. At the Fullers, that'll get him votes. You know, I think often these elections work at a very basic level. It's, I know that.
Because after all, as I say, not many people came along to the meeting and wouldn't have seen his rather odd performance.
Okay, for me, the most flawless campaign really has been Andy Spence. He's You know, his all of his associations are positive. You know, Ranger, fucking A for Park, releasing the birds, weed control, you know, this, and throughout the campaign he also hasn't put a foot wrong in terms of just speaking wisely, you know.
Although I've, you know, one of the criticisms I've heard of many of the candidates is that they're a bit vague, a bit kind of, well, you know, wouldn't it be nice? And I have heard Andy, you know, associated with that kind of that group. What's your feeling?
Yeah, I take your point. I think a lot of...
It's a very vague election, let's face it. I think this is something that all the candidates have struggled with. Yeah. They're running for a position that they don't fully
understand,
know what it will be. I think it's very courageous of them all to run. But no, I wouldn't say that of Andy. I think he has a real grasp of some useful things that can be done. He's not claiming to know everything.
And he's claiming to listen. His willingness to listen, and he's demonstrated that. Now, it's once again, it comes down to, for me, what you sort of officially know of the candidates from what they've said on the radio and stuff, and what you also personally know of them. And for me, it's a balance of the two things. Sometimes you have to overlook some personal foibles. Sometimes you have to give benefit of the doubt here or there. And for me, the selection process has been made through both of those angles. They're public and their official statements, as well as what I know of them as people working within the community.
Okay, so let's just wrap things up with a few kind of quick fire. You know, you can, I'll give you a category and you can give me a candidate.
Right.
Okay, so the most surprising step up, the one that you didn't think of much of, who was impressed?
Daughter Ray.
Yeah, I was. Me too.
Whilst I couldn't really bring myself to vote for her because I don't because after all she's part of Denise Roche's Brains Trust, so a vote for Denise is going to get you all the benefits of Daughter Ray's energy and enthusiasm. But my feeling watching her in action was, my God, 15, 20 years down the track, this is going to be one fine local politician.
Yeah, and I'll give her that vote. Okay, what's the next category?
Okay, the one who you thought would perform who didn't.
So who started performing?
No,
well.
The one before it started, who you thought, this is one that I think could do well. This is someone who I think will campaign well, will perform well, and let you down.
Well, for me, it's Paul Weldon. He looked so strong at first with his, you know, his
all passion, no content.
But also this hidden stuff about how badly he's handled the.
But I would also say face Dora. I thought she'd really go pretty hard on this one, and I think she'd really get the Ninny Award for who's learned the least in the last 3 years, because it just seemed to be the same old stuff. And I found myself very unconvinced.
Okay, who made the sharpest, most insightful, specific and pertinent comment during the campaign?
Whoa. I can't remember one. Come on, give us
there time. Were a few. I'd say Colin Bearden actually got in a couple of really good ones. He managed to use the scare tactics of what the Super City would mean to us very effectively.
I can't remember one. Sorry.
Okay. We may have already covered this, but the most vacuous, inane statement during the whole campaign.
Oh, yes, there were so many.
There are lots of those. I just loved that one about Graham Hooper saying it's his time to be elected because last time he was 153 votes short of Noble Angelo. That was just wonderful.
Mind you, I think possibly the most stupid statement made by any candidate during this campaign, well, let's take it up a little bit to the councillor level, was Alex Sweeney.
Yeah. Well,
kiss goodbye to any single vote you might ever have got on this island, Mr. Sweeney.
You mean about the water?
About the water reticulation. Oh, yeah. What an incredibly stupid thing to say.
And it's the one thing, I mean, for all the fractious nature of this community, it is possibly the one uniting thing. Like
Mike Lee.
No, the water issue.
Water, yeah.
Yeah, very noticeable that at the meeting last Sunday, that was one of the main one of the things that was debated in these sort of mini community boards that you could sit and watch in action. And absolutely unanimous. If there was a point to the whole resolution, it would be over our dead bodies.
Yeah, and for Alex Sweeney to say he's done some research about this community and come in and say something like that, that is...
utter nonsense.
That is so naive. It's really poor, yeah.
Yeah, I used to have a little bit of time for him, but I don't anymore. That he has absolutely blown his credibility with that idiotic statement.
Yeah, no, that wasn't a good one, poor chap.
All right, so there we go. And remember, if you want to, if you still haven't voted, you can catch up with candidates' statements and interviews on our website.
Yeah, I would listen to this two-minute spiels on the radio. Yes.
And whatever you do, vote. Yeah. No matter who you vote for, just even if you've chucked the papers away, dig them out the bin. It'll only take you 5 minutes. Just fill them in, just so that Waiheke has, we can keep our place as the most engaged community.
Yeah. I think just as a final comment, what's probably going to happen is the five in will be a mixture of Alan and my scream team and dream team. I think we'll have both elements, which is kind of classic Waiheke after all.
And
anyway,
plenty of fodder for future opinionated island trips.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Thank you for doing it, for providing.
No matter who gets in, we will be watching you.
Yes. Okay, you're listening to Island Life. I've been talking to the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, as I do on the first Saturday of every month.
You're listening to Island Life. Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
On the 22nd to the 24th of October, Waiheke's going to see something it's never seen before. Well, maybe, but not in this scale anyway. We've got the Waiheke Island of Burlesque Festival, and one of the organisers, Bianca Sanders, is here this morning. Good morning.
Hello, Waiheke.
Pull your chair in if you like, Bianca. And
sure.
All right, so a festival of burlesque, what inspired you to get this going?
Oh, well, I had two children and I needed to find my sensuality again. So I went on an exploration through looking at the feminine form, and burlesque is very much a feminine art form to me. So I found it through a friend and discovered my niche and explored it through social networks and got very inspired to create the Island of Burlesque Festival.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think probably for a long time that whole kind of thing of you know, sensuality and striptease and whatever was out of favour, you know, say, you know, the whole feminist movement of the 70s and 80s where people were kind of, you know, saying don't sexualise women. But now you've got women embracing that kind of...
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you look at a lot of the burlesque shows and 70% of the audience is women. They just go crazy for seeing other women on stage. Feeling really comfortable in their own skin, and that's really what I want to encourage through creating this festival.
Yeah, so I suppose on the other end of the spectrum, we're in a world which is kind of awash with some really seedy sexual portrayals of women as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're certainly not encouraging that side of this art form. This is very much a stylish, high class, think ostrich feather fans, feather boas. Burlesque is quite an amazing art form in the way that it can be very diverse. It depends on how the performer wants to portray burlesque. So it can be basically ranging from a scale from clown burlesque through to the vintage Hollywood glamour. That's how diverse it can be. I mean, you look it up in the dictionary and it's a name for many faces. That's one of its meanings. So it just depends on how the performer wants to express their personality or their personas through burlesque.
And so you'll be kind of portraying or having that whole range of styles across the festival?
Absolutely. There's a very diverse range of styles. I mean, on the Friday night, the opening of the festival, for Sideshow Circus, for example, we've got a local performer, Parla Fisher, Cindy Barbarella, and she's doing clowning burlesque. And on the other side of the spectrum, you've got our festival headliner, Lida Petit, who performs in a bubble bathtub, and she's very much the vintage Hollywood glamour. So, yeah, there's everything else in between too. So definitely check out our website for more info on that.
So the way the festival works, what, you buy a ticket and go around different venues? And
the way the festival works is it's individually ticketed. So tickets are available down at the Fuller's Ticket Office and Event Finder online. Basically, the way that we've designed the festival is that earlier in the evening there's a VIP dinner event with a few various different performers, and then obviously the guests can enjoy a three-course meal at one of the stunning boutique vineyards on the island. So we kick off, the Friday festival opening kicks off at Casita Meadow with Dino Ferrari, aka Greg Dean. He's going to be hosting the event alongside Rusty Rascal and Love Lee will be doing some music. They're local performers, Russell DeLue and Lee Walsh. And then we've got That theme for that event is Roaring Twenties, and we've got Sugarly Bruin and Kitty Bellevue as well. And obviously that event has got the feature performers for that event, the wonderful Otherworld Dancers, which will be doing a Charleston and Smooth Criminal dance. And then later on in the evening, so that's from 6 p.m. till 8:30. Later on that evening at 8:30, down at the Dunes in Onitangi, we've got the Circus Sideshow event, and that's got a wide range of performers: Venus Star, Nave Nix, which is our only boylesque performer in the whole festival. We've got Cindy Barbarella, which is Paula Fisher, and fire dancers. So people are encouraged to dress up in circus-themed costumes for that event. And then on the Saturday night, we've got the Queen Elizabeth's Golden Court, which is happening at the Goldie Room. that is the featured performer for that event is Sugarly Bruin. She's going to be doing a beautiful ostrich feather fan dance, and there'll be an exhibit by House of Azuli, modelled by Miss Elizabeth Alexander herself. She's going to be the Queen Elizabeth. So basically it's titled Queen Elizabeth's Golden Court, so you'll be sitting down with the Queen, having dinner and entertained. Lily Loka and Rosa Bell from Wellington is also going to be performing at that event. And then later on in the evening, you can check out the Domestic Goddess Show, which is happening up here at Artworks Theatre. We've had some assistance from one of your DJs, Elle, thank you, Elle. that particular show is featuring Tight Knickers, who is two local performers here on the island, Dion Denise and Larissa Wallen, otherwise known as Lara Lush. They're going to be doing a musical set, and the feature performer for that event is Courtney Leah Moore from Wellington. She was also featured on 2020 a few months ago. That show is basically, you can check out the website, but it's more theatre rather than burlesque. It's weaving a story through spoken word, poetry, music, theatre and dance.
So there's a huge undertaking putting on all of these, because with each of them having that kind of theatric performance element to it, to put on all of those shows is a huge job.
It is a big job, but we're taking it in our stride and we're doing really well, and it's really going so well so far. We've had great local support, and we just thank everyone that has been involved so far. It's going to be a success. And
is there a thriving burlesque scene in Auckland that you can kind of tap into?
There is. Yeah. Absolutely. It's definitely in fashion at the moment. It's spreading like wildfire. There's a lot of performers that are beginning to teach others, and it's like a huge chain reaction. It's the awakening of the feminine force. It's just awesome. So just to let me finish up, on the Sunday night we've got our headlining acts, Lida Petit and La Viola Vixen. Lida Petit is very much a key player in the Auckland burlesque scene at the moment. She's the New Zealand Festival headliner, and Lavi Olavixen is travelling over from Australia to join us. So we've got a VIP show that's kicking off from 5:30 up at the Mudbrick Vineyard, and that theme for that event is burlesque in the boudoir, burlesque and bubbles in the boudoir, featuring Lavi Olavixen, Leda Petit, Sugarly Bruin and Rosabelle. And later on that night we've got the festival wrap party, which is happening at the same venue, just to make it easier on ourselves. And that's featuring Nave Nix is going to be DJing alongside DJ Rhea, and we've got Inner Groove Percussion that's coming to do a live percussion set, and the Otherworld Can Can dancers. So it's really exciting. Also, on the Friday Saturday night, the Sandbar is our official after party venue. We've got George FM DJs, Inner Groove's playing on Saturday night, and that's going to be amazing. That's basically going to be where all the performers are going to hang out after the shows. So check that out as well.
So you said it was mainly women who come along to the shows. Does it tend to be like, you know, a ladies' night out kind of thing? That
yes, but in saying that, it's very much something for couples to go along to together. Just be careful later on, because as you can imagine, it does get you going. Yeah, it's something for everyone, but certainly it gets the ladies excited. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good stuff. And we're going to have, I think, next week here on the show, I think we're going to have Tight Nickerson.
Yes, yes. They're the musicians that are going to be featuring in the Domestic Goddess show. I forgot to mention that I'm going to be singing up at the Mudbrick as under the performance name of Siren and the Coco Risque Band. So that's happening at the VIP event.
Excellent.
The dinner show. So.
And your website, which, tell everyone what that is.
It's www.waihekiburlesquefestival.co.nz, and you can check out Event Finder for ticket purchases.
Okay.
As well.
Yep. And that links through from your site? Is it?
Yes, yep. It does.
And is,
yes.
Are there places around the island where people can get tickets as well?
Yes, the Fuller's Ferry, Fuller's Ticket Office, down at Maatiatia. You can. There's limited ticket sales down there, so if you want your tickets, get in quick. Yeah, I'd just like to take this opportunity to say thank you to all the locals involved. Everyone's been amazing. I really appreciate everybody's support. And I'm really excited about the Domestic Goddess show. That's one thing that's really getting me going. We've got the Otherworld Housewives doing a performance too, and it's just going to be amazing. I'm so excited. Can I pass this excitement on to you?
That's great. So Waiheke Island Burlesque, I keep on getting it wrong. Waihekiburlesquefestival.co.nz is the site. Go and check that out and you'll get kind of a taste for what's going on there. And that's Labor Weekend. So, of course, the Sunday night stuff, you don't have to worry. It's not a school day on Monday. So,
yep.
Yeah, good stuff.
Come and let your hair down.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, and we'll be hearing more about the festival next week. Thanks
yeah.
very much, Bianca.
No worries.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirua.